Food Today, science-based information on food, nutrition and safety. From UFIC, the European Food Information Council. Today we're joined by two experts who will introduce us to stevia and EFSA's opinion on stevia and stevial glycosides. First, we talk to Ashley Roberts, and secondly, to Dr. John Christian Larson.
My name is Ashley Roberts. I am the director of the Food and Nutrition Group at Cantox Health Sciences International, based in Toronto. And I've spent the last 25 years of my life researching high-intensity sweeteners.
Dr. Roberts, what is stevia and where does it come from?
Stevia rhabdiana bretoni, more commonly referred to as stevia, is a herb native to Central and South America. It belongs to the same family of plants as sunflower and chicory. In fact, stevia is still cultivated today in Paraguay, Central America, as well as Japan, Malaysia and China, with China being the largest producer of stevia in the world.
What are stevial glycosides and how are they different from stevia?
Stevia is the general term used to refer to the plant Stevia rhabdiana bretoni, and stevial glycosides are the sweet-tasting components found in the stevia leaf. In fact, there are at least 10 unique stevial glycosides in the leaf of the stevia plant, with the most prominent ones being steviocide itself and rhabdiocide A.
What has stevia been used for in the past?
It has been used by the indigenous tribes found in South America who used the plant leaves to sweeten drinks for at least 200 years. Japan has also used stevia-based sweeteners for the food and drink industry now for about 40 years.
How does stevia work as a sweetener?
Well, stevia itself is a high-intensity sweetener. In fact, it's around 200 to 300 times as sweet as sucrose. The sweetener itself, stevia, is very heat stable and pH stable, and it has zero calories, and that means that it's non-glycemic, so it doesn't affect your blood insulin or glucose levels. And the sweetener fills an increasing demand by consumers for the food industry for plant-based sweeteners.
What kinds of products could stevia be used to sweeten?
Actually, stevia is a very versatile sweetener, and it can be used in a wide range of food and beverage applications, including yogurts, cereals, fruit juices, and baked goods. Basically, it can be used in any product where other high-intensity sweeteners can be used, because it's stable across a wide range of temperatures and pHs.
What are the benefits of stevia for consumers?
Well, stevia provides an exciting new way to reduce sugars in the diet for those who are looking to maintain or lose body weight and for those who are managing their diabetes. Additionally, it provides another option for consumers who prefer natural sweeteners.
Do we know that stevia is safe?
Yes, we know that it is safe. This is the conclusion based upon the fact that there is a very large safety database which is publicly available. These are also the conclusions of leading food safety experts and regulatory authorities, including the Joint Expert Committee on Food Additives and the Food and Drug Administration in the United States. In addition, stevial glycosides have been approved for use in nearly 20 countries.
What are the next steps that need to be taken before stevia can be used in products in Europe?
Well, after the publication of the scientific opinion by the European Food Safety Authority, the approval of stevial glycosides for use in food and beverages will be considered by the European Commission and the European Parliament. And this process is expected to take another 1 to 2 years.
When are European consumers likely to see products sweetened with stevia on supermarket shelves?
Well, consumers in Europe will see products in the market soon after approval by the European Union. In fact, France has already approved a temporary national approval, so consumers in France now have the choice of products ranging from juices to tabletop sweeteners.
Could you please tell us your name and occupation?
My name is John Christian Larsen, and I come from the Danish National Food Institute, which is a part of the Danish Technical University. And I'm placed in the Department of Toxicology and Risk Assessment. And I am a what's called a consultant here in toxicology and risk assessment. Besides that, I have many years of experience participating in JECFA meetings and participating in European expert groups, the former Scientific Committee for Food and then the EFSA AFC panel, and now when this panel was split into two, I'm now the chairman of the panel for food additives and nutrient sources. So I travel quite a lot down to Parma to participate in these panel meetings.
EFSA recently produced an opinion on the safety of stevial glycosides as a food additive. Could you please explain how EFSA carries out these opinions and who requested this specific opinion?
Yeah, this specific request comes from the European Commission, because the European Commission gets applications from people who want to sell the stuff. And the Commission then asked EFSA to evaluate the safety of this, in this case, this particular food additive. And in EFSA, there is several scientific panels, and the panel for food additives and nutrient sources are the panel that deals with such compounds that are deemed to be food additives. And the procedure is that companies who make an application, they also provide EFSA via the commission, they provide EFSA with a dossier, in this case a huge dossier, containing all sorts of chemical information, and more importantly, maybe also a lot of toxicological information on studies in vitro, in experimental animals, and in humans. And then this panel, I abbreviated the ANS panel, they have formed two working groups that in fact are the groups who did most of the works. So they get all these dossiers, and we appoint a rapporteur to digest the stuff. Say many times there are two or three rapporteurs. There's one who deals with the chemistry, one who deals with exposure assessment, and one dealing with the toxicology. And these rapporteurs, they provide the first draft for opinions, which are then discussed in the working group. And it will go back and forth from working group to rapporteur and back again. And at a certain time, then the working group decides, now they think that they are so advanced in their opinion that they can send it to the panel. And then the panel puts this draft opinion on its agenda, and then discuss the text and the studies and so on. And in many cases, also the panel in the first run say, oh, we might need to know a little bit more about this and that. And then it go back to the working group, and then it come back to the panel. And finally, when the panel is satisfied with what's written in the opinion and agreed, what should be the outcome of the opinion, then it's adopted. And then the next step is for EFSA to put the final opinion on the EFSA website, where it's open for everyone who can see it. So that's the procedure that is going on within EFSA. And in this case, there were dossiers, there were even three dossiers, there were three applicants for the stevial glycosides. So there was quite a huge number of studies and information to digest for the panel.
Could you please tell us about the EFSA safety opinion on stevia or stevial glycosides in particular?
It's very important, I think, to say that all these dossiers that EFSA evaluated and the opinion is concerned with a stevia glycoside product that has a very tight specifications. Stevial glycosides consist of, in chemical terms, of the steviol moiety. That's sort of the backbone. That's the important thing in the molecule. And attached to the steviol molecule, you have various sugars, glucose, xylose, rhamnose. It really doesn't matter. But that That's why we call it the stevial glycosides, and they are the ones who have this a sweet taste. These products evaluated, they contain almost 100% of these well-identified stevial glycosides. So it's not an crude extract of the plant stevia or whatever. It's a very closely specified product. And it's important to say, because all the important toxicological studies has been done on this particular more or less pure product. And the other thing is that there are several different stevial glycosides, but the only differences is in the sugar moiety, whether it's glucose or whether it's rhamnose, which all are sugars, because what's toxicologically is important is that when you eat stevial glycoside, then the bacteria in your gut, they will split the molecule and release steviol. So irrespective of which sugar is sitting there, it will end up with steviol. And that's why we could use all the studies on these very similar products to evaluate the steviol glycosides. And the information we had, of course, a lot about the chemistry, the specifications, impurities, and that sort of thing. We also get information about where the applicant do wish to use the compound as a food additive, in which foods and in how much amounts in the food. And that's also important for us. Then we can make an exposure assessment. And then we get a number of toxicological studies, studies on the acute toxicity, the short-term toxicity, the chronic toxicity, that would be feeding studies for several years in experimental animals, and studies for carcinogenicity, and studies for what we call genotoxicity, whether the compound is able to interact with our genes. And in addition, for these stevial glycosides, there was a couple of special studies on, for instance, effects on kidneys, effects on reproduction, and effect on blood pressure in humans. And there were even tolerance studies in humans done over quite some time, I think a 16-week daily ingestion of these compounds, and then the humans were followed for adverse effects. So there was really a very big dossier. The outcome of the bottom line was that almost no toxicological effects can be seen after feeding stevial glycosides to experimental animals. The only effect you would see in some studies was that the animals lose a little bit weight, and this is really not it's really not taken as a toxicological effect. It's more that it could be that the animal didn't like the taste of that particular feed with so much steviol glycoside in it. So at the bottom line, the panel used a long-term study, 2 years in the rats, where the rat was giving a huge doses corresponding to almost 400 milligrams per kilogram body weight per day. And then the usual practice is that this no observed adverse effect level, it is called, we divide it by an uncertainty factor of 100 and then reach an acceptable daily intake for humans. And that would then be 4 milligrams per kilogram body weight per day. So that's what the panel at the bottom line says, that the ADI, or the acceptable daily intake, in the opinion of the panel, should be 4 milligrams per kilogram body weight per day, based on all these studies. And then in parallel, the panel conducted a exposure assessment And from that, the panel assumed that the product would be used in all foods where the applicants wanted to use it and in the highest amount that they said they would use it in. This is, of course, a very conservative way to do it, and it's seen from the applicant side. I think it's wishful thinking that it will be used that much, but that's part of the game that we use this conservative scenario. And from using that, the panel could flag, then it's a flagging to the commission that if this conservative approach is used, then children and also adults in some cases might exceed this acceptable daily intake of 4 milligrams per kilogram body weight per day. So it's now up to the European Commission, and I think also the Parliament, European Parliament, but the Commission who suggests to the Parliament to sort of sort out where would they allow the product to be used and in what high amounts would it be used. The ultimate goal, as I see it, would be that they take care that the European consumer do not exceed this acceptable daily intake by eating European food. So with this opinion on the ADI and a conservative exposure assessment, then the job is done by EFSA and the panel. All the risk management is then up to the European Commission.
In the past 25 years, stevia has been reviewed in Europe 3 times by leading food authorities and rejected. What's changed to warrant a positive safety opinion from EFSA?
That's simply, I think it's two things. The one thing is that what's now applied for is a very well-characterized product. That's the one thing. The other thing is that the whole package of toxicological studies have now been provided by the applicants. From the earlier evaluations by the former scientific committee, there was a lack of toxicological studies. And when a committee do not get an adequate dossier on the toxicological studies, then the the panel will never set an ADI or would never do a final assessment of it. But these studies has been produced by the applicants during the late 90s and into the 2000 years. So I would say that's the completeness of the dossier that is now available on these compounds and the very precise specifications for the product. Some concerns previously, I think, expressed by the SCF was not related to these stevial glycosides. That was related to some crude extracts of the plant stevia, and it probably had nothing to do with the glycosides.
Does this mean that all stevial glycosides are safe for use as a sweetener?
That is only the opinion is, and the ADI is only related to the stevial glycosides that stands up to these specifications, that they should be almost 100%, at least more than 95% pure with regard to stevial glycosides. And it should not be a crude product where there's only maybe 30% and the rest is all other plant materials. So this evaluation, for instance, would not go for what would be a pulverized extract of the plant.
Does this mean that stevial glycosides are safe for everyone?
I would say yes. That's the normal position I would have when the panel issue an acceptable daily intake. We always say that is the background is what we know now, what science, the state of the art in science tell us now. Then we cannot see any safety problems for anybody. There has been special studies about effect of steviol glycosides on such thing as blood pressure. And because I think in the medical community, there are some people are interested in stevia glycosides to treat maybe against hypertension. But you must be aware, then we are talking about doses that are much, much higher than the ADI. And then we are then entering the medical treatment world, and that has nothing to do with the food additive use. And stevia glycosides, in fact, has been tested in humans for effects on blood pressure and effects in people with diabetes and that sort of thing. And at the level of the ADI, no effects were seen in humans, even in these more vulnerable groups or more sensitive groups. So that's why I would say it's safe for everyone. Yeah.
Can steviol glycosides be used in all foods?
That's not up to me to say, because that's up to the European Commission and the European Parliament. As I tried to explain, that there is the applicants, they have a lot of proposals for which food they would like to use stevia glycosides and in which amounts. And the panel used these figures to do a very conservative exposure estimate, and the result was that some people might exceed the ADI. So I think it's up to the Commission very closely to look into this and see whether in some cases it should not be allowed in some foods, or it may not be needed in that high amounts and that sort of thing. But it's certainly outside the remit of the panel and outside the remit of EFSA, because this is risk management, and that's for the EU Commission to do.
Food Today. Science-based information on food, nutrition and safety. From UFIC, the European Food Information Council.